ready to have an AA meeting? My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight we have Ken A.
My name's Ken. I'm an alcoholic. I always wonder how to start this off. I can always say, I was born October 18th, 1960. And if you're thinking about it, I'm about 62 years old. And I was born to a young couple. And my parents are very loving, caring parents. And what they wound up with is someone coming home at 4 in the morning. Well, actually, someone calling the drug dealer at 4 in the morning to see if he's still up, see if I can go by and pick something up. The guy that walks out of a bar at 6 a.m. and the sun's hitting him in the face because the sun got in the car. Because that's what I am. I'm an alcoholic. And in reality, what that means is that my solution and my way of coping at life is to have another one. And it really doesn't matter what it is for me. It doesn't matter if it's a drink or drug. It just doesn't matter. Anything to change the way I feel. See, that's what I'm really looking to do. I'm looking just to change how I feel. Because just for some reason, I don't feel right. I don't feel right with me. I'm uncomfortable in my own skin, and I need a fix. And literally, that's what they call it. That's what I need. I need something to make me feel better about me. That's how I got here. Now, what happened to me is, my parents, in their infinite wisdom, had figured out that I had a problem and were sending me to these various people to see. They call them psychiatrists, shrinks, whatever you want to call them. And I had gone to one, and he said, all right, well, here, do this, try this. Stop using drugs for a month and see what happens. I was successful with that. I stopped using drugs for a month. In that meantime, all I started to do was drinking like fish. See, it really doesn't matter. I'm looking for the result. And that's what the Big Book talks about. We drink for an effect. I'm looking for an effect that I'm going to find somehow, some way. And what happened to me, I'm not going to spend too much time on my using. I mean, I'm an AA meeting. I'm not here because I want to be here. This was not my yearbook. It didn't say, turn 22, go to your first AA meeting. That was not in there. I came here because this psychiatrist who my mom had sent me to said, I'll take this patient, go to treatment, go to halfway house, and go to meetings. The least intrusive of all of those is go to meetings. It's like, okay, I'll go try this. Because, see, I've been up all night, and I couldn't stop. Just kept doing it, and doing it, and doing it. And I couldn't stop. And that was a moment of clarity for me. That's a moment of grace for me, because I realized I'm the one that has a problem. Doesn't matter that all these people that love me are telling me I have a problem. That doesn't mean anything to me. It only matters when I understand that I'm the one that has a problem. I'm the one that needs help. There's something wrong, and I don't know what it is. Because I don't know. Okay, I think I'm just fine. Leave me the fuck alone. Excuse my French. But that's essentially what it is. That's how I grew up. Leave me alone. I'm fine. I can handle this. Obviously, I couldn't handle this. That's how you get here early. It's my inability to handle this. And why went my first meeting is All right, I can't handle it. Show me how to handle it correctly. See, I didn't want to stop. I want to know how to do it successfully. You know, I didn't want to stop anything. I was doing just fine, according to me. See, I'm using my thinking because I had no other thinking. You know, if you look at the first step, the first word is we. It tells me that I can't figure this out by myself. Because that's what I always want to do. I'll take my little problems, go in my little corner, figure it out, and then I'll come out and tell you how I figured out my problem. See, I don't want to bring the problem to you and tell you I have a problem. I want to figure it out and then tell you how I solved it. Unfortunately, for most of us, it doesn't work that way. I have to come to you and ask you, how do I deal with this? See, I was 22, too. I don't know how to deal with life. You know, my idea of college was, all right, well, I was drinking too much. So I just couldn't make these morning classes. I took a class at 6 o'clock at night, thinking that would solve my problem. I went there twice. I went there 2 times. See, it wasn't the class. I was busy drinking. I was busy getting high. That didn't matter. The only thing that I was practicing being at was a beach bum. You know, I was nothing. I was going to go nowhere. I was going to be nothing. That's how I get here. You know, all the people around me that love me, I'll go this way. I think I'm not affecting those who care about me, right? You know, my parents are up waiting for the drug-addicted son to come home every night. And I'm not affecting them. How much sleep do I deprive them of by my own selfish behavior? Because that's really what my addiction is. I take one drink or one drug, it is the most selfish thing I could possibly do, because then it is all about me. Because you don't matter. She doesn't matter. My parents don't matter. That job doesn't matter. Because when I take one, I have to have the second one. And then all it is about is, where am I going to get my next one? And I wonder why I fell out of college. Because I'm busy worrying about, where am I going to get my next one? Because that's all I do. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. That's all I'm ever going to do. Now, said all this, my first meeting was not an AA meeting. I went to an NA meeting, okay, because I could identify that I had a drug problem. Okay, you know, I couldn't stop. I understood that. And NA told me a couple of very important things. Those who make our meetings regularly stay clean or stay sober. Regularly, not sporadically. Those who attend regularly stay sober. And what it is, if I attend a meeting regularly, I'm looking to increase my odds. Everybody tells us we have shitty odds. Well, if I can improve them, I might want to consider doing that. You know, those who attend a meeting regularly stay sober. You know, work steps or die MF. You know, what they're telling me is, we have a solution. Do you want it or not? I'm in a 12-step program. There is nothing else here. You know, they are 12 steps. I can either work them or I cannot be in the program. That's the only, you know, that's all that's offered here. You know, and that means work all of them, not 1, 2, 3, and then decide, oh, I think it's a good time to go back out. You know, I work all of them, and I work all of them because all I'm looking at doing is increasing my odds. See, I want to increase my odds. I see what happens to people who go back out. You've been here a while, you figure that out fairly quickly. We do not come back in here with a brand new iPhone Mercedes-Benz. Okay? We come back in here with a tail between our legs. All the shame and guilt of going out one more time and disappointing all those around us who care about us. That's how we come back in here. You know, and we understand that here. The people out there, they don't understand that because they don't have to. We do. We understand what shame and guilt are. For the fact we've had to walk through it. You know, I'll say one other thing about my past. You know, I was a guy that, I can remember, I got a whole brand new thing. It was an 8-ball a quarter or something of cocaine. And I thank God for the cocaine I got. That's who I am. Okay? And part of what that is I want God to go out and save the world and leave me alone because I'm not worthy enough of his time. And that's what I need to understand. See, I'm not worthy enough to have God in my life. You know, because he can go out and take care of the world and I can take care of myself. I have no personal relationship with God. I just know he's there. That's how I got here. You know, and I was talking about the first thing. It takes time to figure out what an alcoholic and an addict is. It takes time. I thought all alcoholics live underneath bridges. That was my perception. Now, one more time, what am I relying on? My perception. Which at any given moment is subject to be off. It's not going to be correct. Yeah, it's going to be flawed. That's why we have things like sponsors. So we can go to them and say, look, does this sound like a good idea? Is shooting that person that's in front of me sounding like a good idea? And they'll say no. Okay? They're just driving slow. Leave them alone. You know, but it's always about the we. Okay, I don't do this thing by myself. And most people I know don't do it by themselves. I don't know people who stay sober by themselves because for some reason it doesn't work for us. It may work for you, but people I know, it doesn't work for us. This works for us. This works for an alcoholic like me, an addict like me. It works. And if it works, I think I'll just continue to do it. See, I didn't have to do anything. I had a roadmap. I just had to follow it. Somebody else had already invented it for me. I just had to do it. And that's what we forget. Thinking about doing it is not doing it. Sitting there on my ass, thinking about going to a meeting is not being in a meeting. It's only when I get up off my ass, get in the car, and drive to me that I'm at the meeting. That's where the benefits lie, not me sitting on my couch. That's why you get step two and talks about insanity, right? Well, what it's really talking about is me looking at drugs and alcohol as a solution. That's my problem. I look at them as a solution. I don't know why I was still looking at jail and institution death being a solution, but for some reason I do. Because that's what the book tells us we wind up in. Not real nice places. Not places I choose to visit voluntarily. You know, we wind up in these places because we just drank ourselves there. I was sponsoring a guy one time, and he kept relapsing. And he just relapsed, and he was in his car drinking, and he called me. And I asked him if he was okay, and he said, yes, I have a roof over my head. He had lost his apartment. But see, he has a roof over his head. That's what mattered. Because see, he had adjusted his thinking where it was, I have a roof over my head, I'm okay. And I have a bottle in my hand. That's what happens to us. It doesn't happen overnight. We just gradually drift there as a result of this disease. So, next step, can you believe that part of ourselves could restore sanity? Well, first I have to understand that that's my insanity. And what I need to be restored from is that. You know, my alcoholic thinking. Because that's what it is. I'll do that later. You know, the search that came to believe that part of ourselves could restore sanity. Now, this does not mean that I have to figure out what God is. See, I'll take 6 months to figure out what God is and think I'm doing something. See, one more time, I'm thinking. I'm not doing anything. You know, early on what they told me is, you know, you get the third step, you work fourth step. That's what I was talking about. And a lot of us don't like fourth and fifth step. We just don't like it. Like, no, I don't want to do that. And part of the reason is, there's a section in the fourth step that talks about we need to talk about our personal relationships. You know, they say sex relationships, but it's really our personal relationships. Okay, I need to talk about people that I interact with because I have problems interacting with people, obviously. Okay, I take drugs and alcohol to interact with people. I have problems interacting with people. It's real simple. Not a real complicated process around you. You know, and I take the fourth and fifth step and I do the fifth step and what happens is I realize that I'm not unique. That all the shame and guilt that I carry around all my life, other people have done too. But I only do that by taking the step. I cannot realize that by thinking about taking the step. I cannot realize that by looking at the steps going, oh, I don't want to do that. I only realize that after I take the step. That I'm just a human being trying to stay sober one day at a time. I don't realize that before. I realize after taking the action to stay sober. You know, what happens to us, okay, and I thought about this earlier. They say, if you want what we have, you know, and then they don't tell you what we have. You know, if you want what we have, stick around, right? See what we have. Nobody ever tells you what we have. What's really offered here, as much as anything else, it's just an opportunity. No guarantee. Just an opportunity of life. Okay. I drink and do drugs, and that's all I will ever do if I did not work these steps. That's it. There's no life there. There's just an existence. There's no life. I don't get to get married. I don't get to have a college degree. I don't get to get a master's degree. You know, I don't get to drive a nice car. I don't get any of these things. Because, see, I'm too busy figuring out where my next one is. Too busy figuring out who I have to call at 4 a.m. I'm too busy trying to get high to do anything else. It takes... Drugs and alcohol, as much as anything else, are very selfish in and out of themselves. They want all of me. All of me. Not half of me. You know, half measures of Elvis, nothing. Half measures of Kim Bell's, nothing the other way, too. Six and seven are, well, here, I'll do a little thing about resentment because I discovered this the other day when I was sharing. When if I have resentment, I was always taught, you pray for this person 21 days, right? Everybody's always taught that if you've been in here for a while. You pray that they get everything they want and need. And what happens when I do that is the other person never changes. It's real interesting. The other person never changes, but what happens is my perception of the other person changes. All of a sudden, they look like a different person, but they're the same. See, that's God doing for me what I cannot do for myself as a result of me taking directions from another person, telling me how to get rid of it. And it works. See, it works. That's the problem. It works. That's what this program does. You know, I, 8, 9, I didn't have a lot of amends. My parents took care of my amends. You know, I was a little brat when I got here. You know, I was selfish, self-centered, to an extreme. You know, I said, you know, sometimes we say, you know, well, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. I guarantee you, before I walked in this room, that is all I thought about was me. My major amends are things like allowing my parents to sleep at night. My amends are, you know, trying to stay in contact with people I've known over the years. Little stuff. They don't have to use stuff. You know, my first girlfriend, you know, wound up with $100,000 debt and went to him and offered to go to jail for it. They didn't put her in jail. But the point is, she was willing to do it. Her amends were much more dramatic than mine. You know, we work the steps not because we want to. We work the steps because we have to. Who the hell wants to work 4, 5, 8, 9? Nobody. Nobody wants to go out and do these things. You know, we work them because we have to do these things. We have to do these things to stay sober. You know, and I've been sober a long time. I do not want to go back out today. You know, and life doesn't stop happening. You know, I mean, I can remember around thinking, okay, I'm going to get sober. Life's going to be great. Okay, I'm not going to have any problems in my life. It's just going to go fine. It doesn't work that way. You know, life still happens. You know, I watched both my grandfathers die. And it's like the reason I bring up this. The first one that died, I was drinking and doing drugs, and I could not wait to get out of that room. I got to go get fucked up. I mean, I couldn't wait. 30 minutes max. You know, I have to go get high. I was sober when the second grandfather died. And I was sober, and I got to stay there for the family. Those are amends. Those are amends. Being able to take care of my responsibilities within my own family. That's what matters to people. Not just to me, to them. You know, and what am I doing when I'm talking about all this? I'm showing up for my own life. I'm seeing what life really is. The good and the bad. You know, my first girlfriend in recovery, Virginia Barnes. And, you know, we went out for about 2 years, and I decided that there was something wrong, okay? And you do this in recovery. It's like there must be something wrong, so it must be her, of course. It couldn't be me, no. You know, so I broke up with her, and I moved off to Athens to further my education. You know, and an interesting fact happens, okay? Now, this is my thing, okay? She starts dating someone else, and I go ballistic. Okay? Now, it doesn't matter that I broke up with her. Now I want to get back together with her because she's dating somebody else. See, this is my thinking, okay? And I'm sober. I had like two and a half years sober. I'm sober. I'm still nuts. Okay? Sobriety's not necessarily going to bring me nuts, bring me sanity overnight. You know, that's what I need to understand. I'm just a human being. See, that's what we forget. We're not supposed to be fucking perfect. We're not supposed to be saints. Even in the book says, we're not saints. We're supposed to make mistakes. How else am I supposed to learn? You know, and I get back together with her, and then, you know, we break up again. But one of the things she did was she was going to this meeting that, you know, what they did is they went through the big book of the 12-12. And it taught me what going through the book is. See, by going to meeting with her, I learned what that was. So isn't that a gift? A little gift that was given to me just by showing up, and even though I was insane, being willing to date this person. You know, she died sober. She died a Lutheran minister. You know, so when I look at how do I know I just was supposed to help her along the path. See, I don't know. See, my judgments are bullshit. And the reason I say that is I always want to judge something. That's bad, that's good, that's good, that's bad. How do I know? Who made me God? You know, all religion tells me I am not God. I do not know what is right or wrong. If I don't know what's right or wrong for me, how the hell do I know what's right or wrong for you? I don't. That's why we only share our experience, strength, and hope. Okay, I will share my experience with you of dating a nutty woman. Okay, I can share that with you, but I cannot tell you not to do it. Okay, that's not my place. Right? Okay, we all have to learn at our own pace. And that's what this is. It's a learning process. You know, as a result of breaking up, my faith grew. You know why my faith grew? Because I was in pain, I didn't know how to handle it, and I talked to someone else, and I made it through. So my faith grows a lot of times as a direct result of the pain that I have to endure when I don't understand what to do. And that really sucks. But that is the way it is. Because I hate that. That's usually how I grow. I've only grown one time when it wasn't painful, and that's when I made straight A's. Because I didn't think I could do that. See, I was like, I made B's and C's, and in high school, I was like, okay, maybe D's toward the end. And, you know, I didn't think I could make straight A's. I didn't think I was that smart. And I made straight A's, and I can remember thanking God and crying because I realized that I wasn't who I thought I was. See, I don't get that gift without being sober. I don't see that gift. Because it's hidden from me with drugs and alcohol. It's hidden. Because I can't see it. See, that's the sad part. I can't see it. The second time I broke up with a woman after I got together with her. And it says, you know, AA guy meets AA woman on campus. That's what happens to you, okay? It's just reality. Okay? If you go to night meetings and go to the gym, you have very little time for something else. Okay? So you've got to meet somebody in the rooms to date, to marry, whatever. And second time, it was not as painful to to go through because I understood that I would be okay, see? Because I had the experience of breaking up with someone before. And she left me. I never left her. Okay, and she went on to her own college degree, see? That's what's nice. She went into her own college degree. You know, and I don't know where she is now, but I mean, hopefully she's okay. See, but that's not my place to know where she is. My place is just to be present with her when I'm with her. And my responsibility is to make whatever mistakes I have to and just stay sober. See, God gets to stay sober here, guys. That's where I get the opportunities. It's just to stay sober. That's all it is. You know, and the gifts are there. Most of the times the gifts are there if I choose to look at them. That's a different story because I can only see what I can see. I can only hear what I can hear. And sometimes I can't see it and sometimes I can't hear it. That's why I still have cured defects because I can't see them all. I can't hear them all. You know, I can remember being in a meeting somewhere and say, you know, when your ass falls off, pick up, take to a meeting. You know, and if you've been here long, if you've heard that, you know, and my ass has fallen off because it's supposed to in recovery. Because life is life. You know, I got married to this beautiful little Russian lady. And about 3 years into our marriage, you know, she was having problems seeing. Okay, you know, okay, we'll take to optometrist, we'll get some glasses. Well, the optometrist looked into her eyes and he saw a brain tumor pushing against her optic nerve. That's why she couldn't see. Now, this is in recovery, okay? And, you know, I've been sober 20 years. This is in recovery. I've been sober 20 years, and I'm like, this is not supposed to happen. I've been sober 20 years, see? I still think that just because I'm sober, you know, bad things, I don't know, I'm not going to call things aren't going to happen that hurt me that like that. See, I think God's going to protect me. You know, and God's just God. Okay. You know, good and bad still happens in this world, even if we're sober. And that's why I need to remember. Things are going to affect me that I have no clue how to handle. And that's one of them. You know, and, you know, 2 years later, she died. You know, she died. She was 36 years old. And she died. And that was very painful. Yet at the same time, the lessons that are there are huge. You'll see, the moment she died, when her eyes pop open, okay, because that's what they do when people die. First thought I had was, let's have a drink. I had 20 years in recovery. I'm thinking, you know, it's like, that's not supposed to be there, right? It is there. It's waiting for me. That's my alcoholism. Luckily, what's just fine that is, if your ass falls off, pick it up and take the meeting. That's right behind that. She died at 7:30, I was at a meeting at 8. Because that's what I was taught to do in these rooms by other people. Not of my own thinking. Other people taught me that. And what they shared with me is how they handled the death of a loved one. How a friend of mine's son hung himself at 15 years old and no one knows why. You know, because that's part of living. See, we forget that death is part of living and it's just a part of life. And instead of saying why, I began to say why not. Because it's something that I never would want anyone else to experience. I don't like people experiencing death. It's very uncomfortable for them. And so it's a result of what I've had to experience. It's painful and it hurts. And I learned how strong that alcoholism was. It's still there. It doesn't go anywhere. See, it's patient. It waits for me. And what it really waits for is a situation that I have no clue how to handle, and it says, I'm here. I haven't gone anywhere. You know, that's why I still go to meetings. You know, in the beginning, the same thing that people in NA taught me still applies. Those who attend our meetings regularly stay sober. It still applies. You know, and that's what happens. If you want to see somebody go back out, come to these rooms long before you know them and watch them start to miss meetings. Like, yeah, I'll do it this way. This is actually better. I'm going seven meetings a week, right? Early on, I'm doing great, right? Why is Matt telling me I need to go six? I just out of the blue. I need to go six meetings. Okay. Well, I started going six. Then all of a sudden it says I need to go to five. Then four. Then three. Then two. Then I'm going to one meeting a week and there's something wrong with that meeting. See, there's something wrong with that meeting, and what I've done is I've just set myself up without the aid of anyone else. By my own thinking. See, I'm alone one more time. And you know, an addict alcoholic alone is in bad company, because all I have is me, and I'm not the best person always to talk to. my thinking is still off today. You know, but I continue to show up. See, that's the point. I continue to see consistency is consistency is underrated. I pray on a regular basis. I show up at meetings on a regular basis. You know, I try to meditate on a semi-regular basis. Okay? You know, but I do these on a consistent basis. You know, I like my habits. You know, when I start going to the gym, I go on a consistent basis and I get results. If I stop, I stop getting the results. It's the same thing with the program. If I stop, I stop getting the results. And if I'm getting good results, why am I going to stop? Why is my head telling me to stop? It's my alcoholism part of my head. It's telling me, no, you don't need this anymore. Well, if I didn't need it, I would have never gotten to my first meeting. And, you know, I need to remember, my mother took me to my first meeting. I did not want to go. Okay, I had a week to detox, and I did not want to go. But I told her I was going, so I went. You know, and it's not so much the first thing that mattered. It was the second one. Why did I go back after the first one? The reason I went back is because people were laughing. And I couldn't laugh anymore. They felt something that I couldn't feel anymore. And I wanted that. That's why I went back. You know, there was something here that I wanted. And that's part of what we offer. You know, I can become a human being in here. Because I don't know how to do that. And God, in His infinite grace, gave me 12 steps. See, that's all those are. It's because I couldn't get it any other way. God said, here, go try this and see if this will work for you. Now, what am I going to do with that? Am I just going to slap him in the face and go, fuck you, I don't want this anymore? Sorry. But, you know, I mean, this is what God offered me. He offered me a way out of my misery. You know, out of being nothing, I was going to be nothing. I could not get through college because I could not go to class. Period. That's a real simple one. I couldn't do it. And I was never going to be able to do it if I continued to drink and do drugs. When that is relieved of me, when the obsession is relieved, then I get the choice. See, I get a choice. I get a choice of whether I want to drink and do drugs. Just a choice. See, that's what... And then when life happens, I get that choice. God gives me a choice for change. He said, look, bad things are going to happen. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to pick up the phone and call somebody? Are you going to go to a meeting? Are you going to call your sponsor? Or are you going to pick up another drug or drink? There's not a third choice in there, guys. You know, I can either take the spiritual tools laid at my feet, which are those things, or I can go back out. And if you go back out, we'll be here when you get back. You may think you get away. Most people I know, they don't get away. They just don't get away. And part of the reason is, there's always a part of my mind that knows there's a better way. See, that's what's really fucked. It knows there's a better way, and it uses it against me. You just relapse. You should go have another one. And another one. And 10 years later, you're still having that one that Jesus went out on. 10 years later. That's not real pleasant. Because we know where you go. You know, underneath the bridge is not a real pleasant place to sleep from what I've heard. And your car's not a real pleasant place to sleep. You know, it's just not. You know, these are not pleasant places that we go. The other thing they told me early on was, you know, give this way a chance. You know, stick around for a year. If you don't like it, you can go back out. There's no one around you that has taken a hammer and nailed your feet into the floor. But when you give it a chance, that means you work all 12 steps. You don't work 1, 2, and 3 and think, oh, I've done something. There's 12. There's 12 for a reason. Because eventually what happens is I need to give this to others. And I don't know how to do that. See, I don't get here knowing how to do that. But what I do get here is I get here willing to learn. I get here willing to ask the sponsor, you know, well, should I go do this or should I go do this? And he's not going to tell me what to do. He's just going to share his experience. See, we're just going to share our experience. You can go off and do whatever the hell you want. It doesn't matter. We will share what we have. And I worked at the treatment center for a while, and I shared with those people everything I had, and they did not stay sober. What you're given are the gifts that will help you stay sober, but you have to take them and use them. It's not just necessarily enough to hear them. I have to be able to take them and use them and go and apply them in my daily lives. You know, I learned how not to be late by listening to someone share their experience of being late and what it really was. You know, I'm late because I'm a selfish son of a bitch. I think everybody should wait on me. Okay, you know, you have to wait on me, all right? That's really what it is. Okay, I don't plan well. I can do it that way. And in reality, that's the truth. I need to plan to leave 15 minutes before I should even really supposed to leave. But what he would share was he leaves 15 minutes ahead of time. Okay, in other words, if he's supposed to be there at 7:30, he'll try to be there at 7:15. Ding, you know, that's how I don't be late. Or that's how I'm late very seldom nowadays. Okay, but that's how I do it. And I heard it from somebody else because I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get it. The reason I couldn't get it is I wasn't in a position to hear it. See, I'd be in the position to hear it And God's only going to show me what I can handle at that time. You know, before Victoria died, you know, my sponsor, asshole, that I had for 14 years, rode a four-wheel up a hill, and I flipped over on him and punctured his lung. And a week later, he was dead. Now, that was before we found out my wife had a brain tumor. So you don't think God's preparing me for what's coming? And now I can't even see that? Okay, because he died, and I got to experience the grief of that. And then, a couple years later, my wife died, and I could experience the grief of that. And stay sober. See, there's always that little catch that I stay sober. Because if I stay sober, I learn. If I don't stay sober, I never learn. If I don't stay sober, I could drink behind her death for years. No one would ever question me. Oh, his wife died. He went back out. You know, that happens. You know, but I don't learn. I don't learn what my alcoholism is. And I don't get to share that with friends of mine who might have had the same experience behind me, who watch his wife die. You know, that's when it becomes valuable, when I can share it with another human being. Okay, and go, this happened to me too. That's when all that becomes valuable. See, and if I'm not in these rooms, I don't get that opportunity. Because I'm not here to share it with other people. That's why things like meetings become so important. Because it's the place where I can share life as it happens in my life. And I can share it with you. And we have all types of gifts. The gift of getting straight A's is a gift. The gift of getting a college degree is a gift. The gift of getting a master's degree, the gift of getting married, the gift of having a nice car. All these things are gifts that I have no business having. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. They bury us. We don't make it. We die. And that's just reality. And unfortunately, a lot of what I see is that, you know, people know there's another way and they can't make it and they blow their brains out. You know, because they know there's another way. And for some reason, they can't get it. And I don't know why that is. See, it's not up to me to know why that is. It's only up to me to share what I know. See, God's grace is God's grace. And it shows up wherever it wants to. And I'm not in charge of that. See, I'm not in charge. The only thing I'm in charge of is where my feet go. That's the only thing I'm really in charge of. God is God, and I'm just a human being. And I just try to do whatever God puts in front of me to do. Because that's all I know to do. Good or bad, that's just what I try and do. You know, and for some reason, as a result of doing all this, I've been able to stay sober 41 years. You know, not because I did anything perfectly or any of that shit. I just showed up, and I did it somebody else's way. I said, how do you do this? How do you handle this? How do you do that? That's all. You know, and that doesn't mean we don't get crazy, okay? You know, my last girlfriend was really got nuts. And, you know, I was dating someone who I knew I shouldn't be dating. Okay? Because she couldn't stay sober. Okay? And I'll guarantee you that, you know, I can go down to her level. And that's the problem. And that's not where I need to be. Okay? That is dangerous to me. Because, see, I'm going into liquor store, which really doesn't bother me anymore, to buy her booze. Because I don't want her to hurt. Okay? Because I still have Al-Anon issues. Alright? You know, I just don't want her to hurt. You know, because I'm like, you know, she's hurting. You know, take care of this. Okay? Because that's what a guy does, right? That's what I was always taught. You know, and eventually we broke up because she just looked too nice. But the point is, okay, I'm still just a human being. Okay, I'm just trying to do the best I can one day at a time. And sometimes that means I fuck up. You know, that's what I need to understand. That's just all we are in here. We're just human beings trying to do the best we can. You know, and if God's grace is there, we stay sober. And I need to do whatever I can to try and ensure that God's grace somehow slips in past my mind. See, because I think it slips in when my mind's thinking about something else. That's the only thing I can figure out. Okay, if I try on what steps, I try to call sponsors, try and do all this stuff, for some reason grace slips in and I'm sober one more day. And that's really where the gift is. See, I'm just sober one more day. I get a chance one more day. See, I'm just looking for chances. I just get a chance one more day. And as a result of that, I get the other gifts that God has in store for me. See, because I don't know what gifts are in store for me. I have no idea. You know, I don't know. How do I know? I just know to show up. You know. And a couple months. Later on this month, you know, I'm going to meet a girl in Ukraine, see if I like her. You know, to possibly marry her. You know, I don't give up. You know, just because I'm sober. You know, I just keep trying, man, and it really doesn't matter. Okay? It doesn't matter just as long as I keep trying. See? You know, I didn't die yesterday just because some woman broke up with me. You just keep on going. You know. Sobriety is really the ultimate gift. Okay? And it takes someone like me who is so selfish and so self-centered that all I can think about was where am I going to get my next one. It turns me into somebody that is more likely to think about you than he is himself today. That's what sobriety does for us. It takes who we are and it changes us. And it doesn't come about overnight, and it's not a quick solution like drugs and alcohol are, but it's a slow solution that's permanent. See, the book tells me the same person will drink again, and I am not that same person. And all I did was I tried to increase my odds. The alternative didn't look real good. I don't like the idea of being nothing, going nowhere and doing nothing. You know, that's not a real attractive life for me. And as a result of that, I've got to have a life today. And I've had a life, and I'll continue to have one. And thank you for listening to my BS.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Let's hear it for our speaker and for Nutty Women. Yeah.
note came to it somewhere strange to me. As I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge.